Now, why are we doing this? What is the point of the Democracy in Europe movement? We heard the main answer before, but allow me to narrate it once more. We're here because hope is fading, and it is being increasingly replaced by anger, by uncertainty, by fear, by scaremongering, and in the end, by loss of prospect. This is why Trump was elected. Trump was not elected because those who voted for him like him. Brexit did not win because the people of Leeds, of Doncaster, of Cardiff, of the outskirts of London, decided they did not want to be part of Europe. What they have in common, the people who vote, a taxi driver who took me the other day in Athens and to my horror confessed that he is a voter for Golden Dawn, the person who voted for Brexit, most people who voted for Trump, they only did that because they asked themselves a question and they answered it in their particular way. The question they asked was, whom can we vote for to piss off the establishment? That's the main reason why they voted for Brexit. The people in North England who voted for Brexit don't care about the European Union. They feel, in their own language, discarded. They feel they've been left behind by an establishment which for 30 years has been guaranteeing that the top 10% consistently take the 80% to the cleaners, as the English would say. They effectively wipe the floor clean with them. And they don't have to worry about them because the political process is such that at least 40% of the population really don't count. And the only thing that counts is the median voter that is manipulated through the media. And people are sick and tired of that. And when people lose hope and they resort to anger, what you end up with is Brexit, the Alternative for Deutschland, and Donald Trump. And we're here because we feel, correct me if I'm wrong, but we feel that we must replace anger with hope, consternation with rationality, and disintegration with unity. Because in the end, we're all in this together. We're not going to combat climate change as Germans, as Hamburgers, or as Athenians. Either we're going to do it universally, or we're not going to do it. We're not going to deal with the problem of refugees and migration as Germans or as Greeks or as Italians. Either we're going to do it together or we're not going to do it at all. We're not going to deal with economic crisis as Germans who are wallowing in surpluses or Greeks and Portuguese wallowing in deficits. We're not going to deal with our security problems as communities or nations. So the idea that we're going to retreat back to a nation state that is going to provide us with secure electrified fences behind which we're going to hide from the rest of the world is a recipe that can only assist this generation's nationalists, fascists, and all those who actually invest in misery and in hopelessness. The problem with the European Union is that it was really never the kind of union that could naturally respond to crisis by bringing people closer together and creating the institutions that are capable of fostering the degree of consolidation which is necessary to bring Europe together into the United States of Europe. The United States is a very imperfect place. After all, they invented and elected Donald Trump. By the way, I was trying to think of anyone in the United States who is actually happy that Donald Trump was elected, and I do not count the people who voted for him because of anger. Somebody who is really not really angry and happy that Donald Trump is elected. You know who I came up with? George W. Bush. He must be the only person that feels good, because now he's allowed to look presidential compared to Donald Trump. Now, despite the great difficulties and demerits and disadvantages of the United States of America, that country looks really good compared to Europe. Because if you think about it, every time they had a crisis, they got closer together. Since the 19th century, I mean, they had the Civil War, they got closer together. They had a financial crisis, they got closer together. They had another financial crisis, they got closer together. They had 1929, they came up with a New Deal, and they got closer together. Even after 2008, despite the great discontent and so on and so forth, it is a solid political union. Now, people like Helmut Kohl and François Mitterrand imagined that they would create a monetary union, the Eurozone. Then there would be a crisis, and then their successors would do what it takes to bring Europe closer together. It hasn't happened. It was never going to happen. And do you know why it was never going to happen? Because the European Union was never a fledgling democratic entity. Remember the first name of the European Union? It was the European Community for Coal and Steel. It was a cartel, like OPEC, you know, the Organization of Petroleum Exporting Countries, that they get together to manipulate prices. So that's what the European Union started life as. And the Brussels bureaucracy was the bureaucracy of that cartel. Now, in the 1950s, it looked like a good idea, because that cartel allowed the capitalists of Germany, of Belgium, of France, of Northern Italy, of the Netherlands, to form this cartel and stop fighting each other, which is a good thing for Europe after the Great War and the Second World War, right? But the problem with the cartel is that it is pretty good at distributing the cartel's profits during the good times. And the good times were provided to Europe by the United States of America. Because remember, the European Union was embedded in a global plan, Bretton Woods, created by the New Dealers, who understood what it took to have fixed exchange rates, constant exchange rates, and to make this work through a political, hegemonic economic system for taking surpluses from where they're created in the United States initially and distributing them to the other parts of the Union, of the Monetary Union, Europe at the time, and Japan. And while the Americans were providing European capitalism with this umbrella, with the stability, with the management of the macroeconomy, our cartel did pretty well. But cartels are not good at managing crises. Think of OPEC. Every time there is a crisis of prices falling, they fight each other like cats and dogs. Saudi Arabia and Venezuela and so on and so on, they can't agree on anything. During the good times, they agree. During the bad times, they disintegrate. That's the problem with cartels. Now, the trouble with Brussels is that we have created a cartel-like European Union. The bureaucracy there, do you know what they loathe more than anything? It's not terrorism, it's not lack of competitiveness, it's not deficits. It's democracy. Democracy scares them in Brussels. Democracy is only something that they appeal to in name to give themselves legitimacy, but which they actually fear. It's their nightmare. Their nightmare is that people like you will make decisions that will bind them. Brussels is not suffering from a democratic deficit. It's like saying that on the moon there is an oxygen deficit. There is no oxygen deficit on the moon. There is no oxygen. Similarly, in Brussels, there is no democracy. In Brussels, the bureaucracy there is legitimized by the fact that your government is democratic, democratically elected, our government is, the French government is, and so on and so forth. But increasingly, all the important decisions are shifted from Berlin to Brussels, from Paris to Brussels, from Athens to Brussels, to the democracy-free zone. So all we end up with is governments that pretend to be sovereign, but which are not. And if you think that because you are in the most powerful country in Europe, that your government is powerful, you're wrong. My experience in negotiating with Wolfgang Schäuble
You may find this difficult to believe, but I am going to state this as something that I experienced, something I seriously believe in. Do you know what my greatest problem was when I was in the same room as Wolfgang and we were negotiating? He was just as powerless as I was. I mean, he was the finance minister of the most powerful country in Europe, and I was the finance minister of the most bankrupt country in Europe. And yet, allow me to make the point that we were equally powerless to do that which mattered to Europe. On the 25th of June, and before that, on the 11th of June, we had meetings, and I can assure you that we both agreed that what was going to happen in the end with the Greek Troika negotiations was terrible for Greece and for Germany and for Europe, and that we were equally powerless to stop it. Now, this is what happens when you take sovereignty from the democratic realm of the German state, the French state, and so on and so on, and you transfer it to a democracy-free zone, to a bureaucracy which is structured along the lines of a bureaucracy that serves a cartel, and it is incapable of handling a crisis. The result of this inept handling of Europe's inevitable crisis is that the 2008 crisis and everything that followed from that, firstly, started undermining the monetary union, just like 1929 undermined the monetary union of the mid-war period, the so-called gold standard. The euro is based on the gold standard. And our generation's 1929, which was 2008, started fragmenting it. Remember what happened immediately after 1929? In Europe, the fragmentation of the monetary system led very quickly to the rise of xenophobia, racism, fascists and Nazis in government. Now, hopefully Marx was right, and history repeats itself as a farce. But I very much fear that even the farce that we're having presently is not that funny. We have a new, solid, nationalist international, an internationale of nationalism rising up throughout the Western world. And what I find most worrying than everything else is that there is a seeming clash between the establishment and this nationalist international. Take Britain. You know, David Cameron, the Prime Minister then, and the Brexiteers. The part of the establishment that wanted Britain to stay in the European Union and the advocates of disintegration. In Germany, you have Merkel and the coalition government on the one hand, and you have the AfD on the other. In France, you have the establishment and Le Pen. This is what the clash appears to be about, but it is not. Because the establishment, which is completely clueless as to what needs to be done to stabilize European capitalism, is feeding the nationalist international. The AfD is fed by the failures of Merkel and Schäuble. And at the same time, Merkel and Schäuble try to exploit the rise of the AfD to invite you to vote for them. So the two, the establishment and the nationalists, are effectively accomplices. They are sort of dancing a very evil tango with one another. The real opposition is not between the establishment, between business as usual, which is impossible, by the way, because this crisis is making sure that business cannot continue as usual, especially if we're trying to make it business as usual. So the conflict is not business as usual establishment tactics and policies and the nationalists, the populists. The real opposition is between these two accomplices and you folks, Diem, all those progressives that are very keen to reach across borders, across political party lines and to forge a democratic progressive internationale to oppose this duetto of business as usual establishment and the nationalists. This is what we're here about. This is what the Democracy in Europe movement is. We're not here as Greeks, as Germans, as French. We're not here as Marxists or liberals or even progressive conservatives or Greens. We are here as historically minded people, Europeans, who understand that this is our generation's 1930. That is, just after the collapse of Wall Street, which spearheaded these awful developments that pushed Europe towards a never-ending slide into an abyss. We are in exactly the same situation. Some of us have been saying this now for years, that 2008 was not just a little crisis. It was not just a financial sector problem. It was not a banking, it was not a debt crisis. It didn't have anything to do with deficits and surpluses. It was a systemic structural break. The kind that we had before in the late 1920s, early 1930s, the kind that is perfectly capable, unless treated early, politically, to generate a process of disintegration, which will turn one proud nation against another, and until we reach the point where proud nations turn against themselves, just like they did in the 1930s. The Democracy in Europe movement is only going to become significant if it manages to move beyond the standard left-wing practice, rhetoric, and illusion. Because let's face it, you know, I think that we owe Donald Trump and Nigel Farage in Britain, who affected Brexit, we owe them a debt of gratitude. Progressives, especially left-wingers like me, you know, idiots like me, for years, we were seeking excuses for our failures. We were saying, oh, the system is too strong and they undermine us and the media badmouth us and that's why we can't win. It is true that the system doesn't want us to win. It is true that the media distort our positions. But this is not why we're not winning. We're not winning because we have failed to articulate a position that the majority out there will back. It is our problem. It is our fault. It is our failure. Let's begin by accepting that. Trump and Farage demonstrated what? That it is possible to go against the establishment and win. Now, the problem is that they won with a wrong agenda, with a misanthropic agenda. Well, what is our task? Our task is to articulate a radical humanist agenda to reclaim Europe from the perspective of positions which are simultaneously radical and moderate. Because the problem with the establishment is that it is neither. It is neither radical nor moderate. There is nothing moderate about crushing a country like Greece with huge loans that they are taking from the German taxpayer, knowing that they will never be paid back. There is nothing moderate about saying to President Erdogan of Turkey, help us violate international law on refugees so that, you know, we can give you some money in order to do the dirty deeds for us. There's nothing moderate about that. This is extremism. And we're never going to win against people like the AfD, Nigel Farage, Donald Trump, Le Pen, Golden Dawn, if we are a version of nationalism light, if we are racist light, if we do not propose that we shoot at the refugees, but we propose that we make their life very difficult in prison camps in Greece. I'll just finish with two words. Constructive disobedience. What we need to do is we need to make moderate proposals to Merkel, to the establishment, ask them to join us to carry out those moderate proposals. Do not treat them like enemies. But if they insist on misanthropic failed policies that feed the beasts, then we must disobey. How and the manner in which we pursue constructive disobedience throughout Europe is something that we must discuss urgently. Thank you.
Personally, I have many things inspired.